Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, I'm back. Yes, it is I, Stephen Scott, here with you once again. And my hardy crew are with me as well, who've been seeing us through the past couple of weeks when I've been absent. Robin Christofferson, as always, hello to you, sir.
Hello, I'm so glad you're back.
Are you? Is that because you don't have to put up with Sean Preece anymore?
He's here, isn't he?
I know he is. I know he is. But you know, we'll get to that in a minute. First, though, Andy Wynn as well, who's also here with us, our email guy, our eyes
Hi.
On the prize
Hi, Stephen.
Of the emails.
Yeah. Hello. I'm contractually obliged to say I'm glad you're back as well. Yep.
Excellent. Yes. Well, well done. I love these contracts. I really do, because everyone is always so nice to me. It must be like when the Queen walks around and she always smells fresh paint. Mm. Because someone's in front of her with a paintbrush about 2 feet ahead, going crazy. Yes, Sean Preece is also here as well. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Yeah, I thought I'd bring you back. You didn't want to, but I thought I'd bring you back.
No.
Just to say hello, because, you know, you've covered the show expertly.
Thank you.
Well, you know, again, I'm contractually obliged
Thank
to
you.
Say these things.
Thank you.
But, yeah, apparently RNIB says expertly handled. I won't tell you what they said to me in the conference call after, what they really said.
He's not coming
no,
back,
no, no.
I know.
I'm here, I'm fine. Thank you for all your lovely messages. On Twitter, I had some really lovely messages from people saying, you know, essentially hope you don't die. And I didn't, so there you go.
Hey,
it's all
well done, you.
Everything is good.
Hey.
Although, I will say one thing, and this is a bit of the old commercial radio guy in me, right? But, you know, one of the problems when you go off sick or you go off on holiday, when you worked in radio years ago, and certainly when I did work in the commercial industry.
When you worked in radio, you're on radio.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, not what this is, yeah. No. But no, when I was working in commercial radio, you know, everybody was out to stab you in the back to get the gig, right? So if you took a day off or a week off, someone was always ready to jump into your seat, and you might not have a job to go back to. And, you know, I listened to the couple of shows thinking, uh-oh. I mean, don't get me wrong, I already had the cold sweats, and that was bad enough. But, you know, it was getting worse. I thought, I don't need to come back. These guys have got it. But I said, no, listen, I thank you, all of you, for being so supportive. I mean that seriously, because you've been brilliant. And, yeah, it is nice to be back. We've got so much to get through on this week's programme. And just before you ask, I am feeling better and I am fine. So let's not speak about that anymore. Let's move on, because tech is what we're here for. Mm. And I think that's more important than certainly what I am moaning about. And trust me, I've got plenty to moan about, but it ain't about what I've just gone through in those couple of weeks. So let's get into the show. And we're going to kick off with my news, because in amongst it all, in amongst everything that's been happening, I did order something, obviously. I mean, you know, come on. You know me, guys, right? You know how
you weren't
it works.
That ill.
I wasn't that ill. I was struggling. My finger will get to the buy now pre-order button for the iPhone SE. I must do it. So I got there. Thank goodness the Apple website's accessible. And, yeah, I pre-ordered an SE. And, guys, of course it's arrived. It's arrived by now. It's all set up. But the question is it better than my iPhone 11 Pro?
Yes.
Yeah, you're no. going to say yes,
Is it?
Well, I'll give you that answer in a minute. But, Robin, have you bought one yet?
No. I think I said last week that I'm just waiting for something tragic to happen to my wife's 6S so that, you know, the trickle-down thing can happen. But no, not yet.
What
it
kind of kitchen
though.
Floor do you have, Robin?
Oh yeah, no, it's not. It's not tiles or anything fancy like that. So,
do you have sort of slabbing outside your house? Maybe a decking area.
Yep.
A table there.
As soon
maybe?
As we've got a bit of sunshine, that's a good plan.
Okay, so maybe a table, knock it off, smash. Oh dear! And then you know that's that. You can just order on. Just get one ordered,
yeah,
Robin.
What are you
waiting for? Excuses.
It'll happen. It's just a question of when.
Terrible.
So yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Sean? I've been hearing what you've been saying the past couple of weeks. You've got your iPhone 11. You're quite happy with it. But, you know, you did say that the iPhone SE was the phone you probably would have had if you didn't get the iPhone 11.
Yes, of course.
You still have that mind?
Yes, because it's cheaper. So, I mean, you know, it's a no-brainer for me. Of course, you've got the same performance and it's cheaper. So, definitely, I think I would have gone with the new SE. I don't know. Is the performance the same? I suppose we'll get into that in a minute, but... As far as I know, it's the same CPU, so the performance should be identical.
Well, I know, Andy, you're an Android guy. I know that because yes. I literally frog marched you into a store and said, get a new phone! And you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember that day so
well. I bought
well.
One phone and you bought... What did you buy? You were buying speakers or something? Or
do you know what? I think I ordered...
Stand, I think it was.
I was picking up an iPhone. I think it was either the Pro Max or the Pro. It was what, definitely I took it back the week after. That's for sure.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Because I think I had that was that week or that month of just getting phones and sending them back because I just didn't like them for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. So I'd gone in to pick one up, and I think it was one of those charging stands. It was like a really cool
it
charging
was,
stand.
It was very
it was
nice
a wireless charger.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was lovely because it was grey. So my wife would like it because she likes the colour grey. A bit like my personality, she says. And she said, you know, I thought she'll like this, but it's got the charging stand at the top, and then you've got the bit where you can put the watch around the front as well, so you can charge the watch and the phone at the same time. Eh? Eh?
Gosh,
that's
wow.
nice. That's cool.
Well,
so, yeah, cool, anyway.
But, you know, it's convenient.
Okay, fine.
But, yeah, I am an Android boy, so, yeah, I haven't got the SE. That's me.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. And, you know, that's the thing. And look, one of us amongst the group has got to have it, right? It may as well be the sighted guy. So let's talk about the SE. Emails directed to Sean Priest, by the way, because I'm still officially not here. So SE performance versus the iPhone 11 Pro. Right,
here we
okay.
go.
This is a tricky one because it has the same processor in it. I think it's got 1 gig less of RAM in it. The SE's got 3 gig of RAM versus 4, I think, in the iPhone 11 Pro. Although that doesn't really get talked about very much because you don't think about it in those terms. The first couple of days, I had some real issues with it because it seemed sluggish with VoiceOver, wasn't behaving very well at all. And then it crashed spectacularly on the second day. Where I couldn't do anything with it, and I got my good friends at Be My Eyes on the case to look at the screen and see if anything was happening, and all he would tell me is there was a little spinning circle, and I thought, oh, that's not great.
Wow.
And then what I was noticing was as this was going on, the phone was getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter, and I thought, oh, this is surely not another Samsung situation here, right? So a bottle of water was dispatched to beside the phone. Just in case the whole thing decided to blow up in my face.
Fire extinguisher.
yeah, that's right. Bottle of water. And so I get the phone and I looked online for quick ways to solve this and then eventually found, and this is really useful to know because I didn't know this reset method. Used to in the old days, you just hold down the home button and then the power button at the same time and it would eventually reset itself, like a force restart. You can't do that anymore because it's a haptic button, so it doesn't really activate when it's crashed. So what you have to do is you've got to very quickly press the volume up, then press the volume down, and then hold in the power button, but all within like seconds of each other, or even less than a second of each other. And that, if you do that and you wait and you just keep holding it until the Apple logo appears, you're fine. So I did that and got it back up and running again. It did it again a week later and it hasn't done it since. So I'm assuming it's just a software issue. But weirdly, in the last week, it has started to pick up speed in terms of the processing, in terms of the voiceover. It's been behaving better. And the only thing I've read about that seems to make any sense about this is because I did an iCloud backup and then downloaded that backup, what it does is it actually downloads a lot of that data in the background as you're using your phone.
Yep.
So even though it might download the apps and get most things set up, a lot of other settings are still coming down. VoiceOver voices, for example. It's one of them. They still download in the background because I noticed my voice kept changing every day. And I thought, I do like to change the voice from time to time, but this is getting ridiculous. It's doing it for me. But that's because it's been downloading all these voices in the background. So I've noticed now it is behaving more like I would expect. It is reacting really well. It's very responsive. Everything's smooth. And having Touch ID and the home button back versus Face ID, I'm a very happy man. So I can say now, I wouldn't have said this at the beginning, but now I can say I think it is definitely the phone that will beat the iPhone 12 this year.
Whoa. Now then, sir, hang on. Beat the iPhone 12?
Yep.
In what? Sales, perhaps.
Yeah, in sales, maybe. But what are we talking?
I think it's a better phone. Well, I don't think it's a better phone, but I think what I will say is I think that at the price point, and for what you're getting for your money, I think it'd be amazing to find any reason why. The only thing that will make the iPhone 12 worth buying over the iPhone SE is 5G. That's the bottom line.
And it won't have 5G, so no, you're fine.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Okay. No, I'm pleased. And, you know, this all iCloud backup restore and all that, I've heard this so many times now. It seems to cause some glitches when you do restore from iCloud backup on a new phone. I'm just wondering, is it worth it? Is it always better to set this up as a new phone and then just, you know, it's almost like having a clear out, isn't it? And then just bring back the apps you know you're going to use. Don't you think that's always the best way to go with a new phone? Well, you do now, obviously, with these terrible experience.
I think it's just so convenient, though. You have to re-enter the occasional password and that sort of thing in some of the apps. But otherwise, it's just seamless. So my philosophy is if you're having trouble with your old phone, then don't, you know, start fresh with the new one. If it's a bit glitchy, I've got issues with Voice Dream Reader on my, you know, forever forgetting its position, and I've unloaded the app and reloaded it, and I don't want to bring that forward into my next phone because I use that so much. So you know, unless you're having issues, I mean, I got a new iPad a week or so ago, which I'm going to talk about in a future show, but we just put it next to the other iPad and it said, oh, do you want to use this iPad to set up the new one? And apart from the slow performance over the next few days, like Steve said, because I think as well as kind of bringing all the apps down, it then has to do the first iCloud backup for that device as well, which can take days too. So apart from that, I would go with that every single time. It's so quick. And you just have to, you know, the first time you open up Netflix or YouTube or whatever, it asks you to sign in. But apart from that, it's right there. All your folders, all everything. So,
and the amount of people I've seen on forums who ask the question, and it still surprises me, and it shouldn't really, but it does surprise me that people still wonder this. Can you set up an iPhone from scratch if you're blind? The bottom line is yes. And not only can I just for once give some balance and some fairness to Andy's Android phone, with an Android phone, you can do exactly the same. You can set it up entirely without sight on your own. So you get home a new iPhone or a new Android phone, you can set it up completely without sight, and that is really, really important. I think that's a brilliant feature of it. But like you say, these options to do the transfer or whether to fresh start. Weirdly, I've always done it with iPads. I've always done fresh starts with them, but with phones, I've tended to keep the settings as they are because I've spent a lot of time getting everything where I want them. And I love that reset feature, but you have to be prepared, like we've said, for a couple of days where the phone is going to be sort of catching up with itself. But no, I think it's a great phone. I really do. I know you guys have talked about it a lot in the past couple of weeks. I'm not going to go on about it, but I think it's a great phone. And, you know, anyone who's thinking about getting a phone like this, you know, it's a no-brainer, really. I mean, it was 419 starting price for the 64 gig. I can't remember what mine was, 569. Weird numbers, but yeah, 569 I think it was for the 256 I went for. And I only did that because I might be using it for video as well. So I thought best to have a decent amount of hard drive space in there. But no, it's a great phone. Really, really like it. Now, I want to talk about, Robin wants to talk about his new product that he's been buying, although not the iPad. We'll get to that in, like you say, a future show, because there's lots to talk about, but you're still getting used to that. One thing you are loving at the moment, which I must admit I'm a bit surprised about, is the Amazon Echo Show 8.
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned this on an earlier episode, but it was half price. It was £60, and for an 8-inch screen, which I'm not sure if people... I mean, it's big. It's really big. It's almost... if it looks A4, but maybe it's not quite that big. But it's a substantial piece of kit. So if you've got some vision and you're wondering whether to go into Echoes with a screen, because they definitely add more functionality, more information, obviously all the video content, etc., all the video skills, then it's a definite consideration, particularly if you can snap one up at less than the normal retail price of £119. So, yeah, I mean, having said that, so it replaced the 5-inch, which feels like a quarter of the size. I know it, you know, it, as an object, it's much, much smaller.
Makes no sense.
And sorry,
that makes no sense. Hang on, one's 5-inch, one's 8-inch.
Well, it kind of does because the diagonal is, well, you know, 5 to 8.
Yes.
So that's knocking on double, or you know, certainly more than 1.5. And so that, you know, the volume of something that goes up linearly like that would be significantly bigger. You know, it's kind of times, you know, it's cubed, isn't it? So it is a big, big old beast, really. And it went into the kitchen on the wall so that everybody could see it, and timers and news and all that sort of thing. The first thing that Judith said was, oh, I preferred white. And I didn't even think about the colour when I was ordering it. I didn't even cross my mind.
Oh.
It was a black one. And an hour or so ago, I went to get the smaller one off the kitchen bench because it had just been sitting there with its cable coiled up, wondering where I was going to put it. And what was there? It was the bigger one. So she's actually put the smaller one back on in its place. So I'm going to find a home for the bigger one now. But it is significantly bigger, very clear screen, touch screen, obviously got voice view built in. So even if you haven't got any vision at all, you can still drive that thing and get a lot of information off it. So, I really like it compared to the sort of prices that other technology of that kind would be. You know, even a tablet, an 8-inch tablet would cost more than that.
I need to speak.
Yes, yes.
I can't keep it in any longer. You really like it. Okay, so the family's thrown it away. They don't want it. Okay.
No, the kids want it in their rooms, but they're not allowed anything with a camera.
All right, okay.
Even though it's got a hardware shutter, which is a good feature.
It has, yes.
Yep.
So what do you like about it exactly? Is it just the fact that it was £60? I've got no problem with that. I love that as well. But the actual Echo Show is pointless.
Yeah, there's a lot of video skills, so you can watch Amazon Prime,
which are all terrible. They're all YouTube is terrible, totally. I mean, the accessibility when you try and watch a YouTube video, it opens up a Silk browser, which the accessibility is terrible on. Pointless. Don't even use it. Don't even try. And the Amazon Prime video is okay. I'll give you that. But
So there's two choices of browser: the Silk or Firefox. And I know you like Firefox.
And they're all terrible.
So you can choose that one. so you can browse on it, you can listen, you know, watch videos, etc.
Terribly.
So
horrible experience.
Yeah, I like it, and a lot of the skills have information that comes up. So if you didn't catch something, even though you can ask the A-lady to repeat what she just said, just say repeat that, top tip guys. If you didn't catch, even however long the message is, she'll repeat the whole thing. You can review stuff on the screen. There are lots of skills that require a screen to use. So yeah, I like it too. I really, really do. Do I use
I must
it every
admit, I'm struggling
day?
To hold back here as well.
Go on, Stephen.
I mean, you know, I can sort of understand why Andy might want this, because I think, you know, you in the kitchen making your microwave meals want to know how long you should put them on for.
Gourmet.
I'm just surmising. you know, but, you know, that would be a useful thing, and you can follow recipes, or you could use it in the kitchen to maybe watch, Amazon Prime shows.
Yep.
I don't know if you can get Netflix on it, probably not.
No.
You know, that kind of thing I can understand, but I don't know what you, as a blind guy, gets from it, Robin. That's the thing because I must admit, there's a shopping channel you may have heard of, starts with the letters Q, V, and C. I don't want to give anything away. And at the weekend, they were selling it off with, I think it was a camera, and they were doing one with a bulb or whatever it was. And it was on the Easy Pay, and it was on cheap. It wasn't as cheap as that Amazon deal you got from them directly. But I was thinking, do I want one of these? And I was thinking, well, Robin keeps going on about it and how good it is. And then I thought, hang on, what would I do with this thing? I've got the Echo Show 5 and it's in the cupboard. So I think I've answered my own question.
I agree.
I don't know what I get from it that I don't get from my Echo Dot, which, by the way, of all the Echos, the mediums, the bigs, the oversized, the buds, the everything. I love the Echo Dot. That is my favourite of all the Echo bits. And I just don't get what you would get from it.
Stephen, I'm going to assist you with your decision here, right? Because I'm on Amazon to have a look. The price has gone back up to its normal $11,999. Even worse than that, they're out of stock. The charcoal one is not coming back until the end of May. And the sandstone one,
it's so popular.
June. Yeah, so they're out of stock.
What more evidence do you need?
No, look, I've got the Echo
Show. People are bored and they're just spending money.
I've got the Echo Show 5 here, okay? And VoiceView does work okay, but I've had to turn it off on your advice, Robin, because it keeps shouting the time out all the time. It's a nightmare. I mean, look, it's fine. It's okay.
That's the focus, though, isn't it? The focus must be
it
on
is,
the time.
It is, but I keep moving.
Swiped it, maybe?
I keep swiping it over to the temperature or the date, and it keeps jumping back. I don't know what that is. I'm sure there's a fix for it. But the point is, I don't care. The screen adds nothing for me. And I have got a little bit of vision. Not that the 5-inch screen does much for me. But I don't know. I think we are better off with a Dot or, you know, if you want to go high-end, go with the Studio. I just don't see what this offers us. And as for video viewing, I just think the experience isn't there. It's not a great experience using Voice View to navigate around. So it is just a sighted thing, Robin. Simple as that. Leave it alone.
Well,
it's not for us.
It's about options, isn't it? And if you have got eyes in the family, then I think it's a no-brainer.
Well, that's an interesting point, right? Because I must admit, I live in a what I would call a partially sighted household. Even the dogs get cataracts. And, you know, it's...
Love.
It's just true. And, you know, so we are... You can't even ask the dog for help. And it's... For that reason, those kind of things don't really appeal to us. So we kind of think in those terms. But you're right. If you've got someone in the house, your kids and your partner, your wife, your husband, whatever you choose, Robin, life is entirely yours for the taking, then, you know, you're able to buy all these devices and they can benefit from them as well. And, you know, the great thing is that if you do want to use it, you know it's accessible to you. So that is a good point. So, yeah, Sean, behave
yourself. Sorry. And they have moved that show-and-tell feature, which was just for the Echo Show 10, the old version. You now can get it on the Echo Show 5 and 8, not in the UK, but only in the US. But it's interesting that they have put that feature on the Show 5 and 8 because they only have 1-megapixel cameras, which are terrible. So, yeah, but it is out there. If you're American.
Goes to show, though, doesn't it, what the capability of the cameras. Every single time a new phone comes out, we always have the same conversation. Yep. Oh, well, the camera will be really good for OCR and it'll be really good for this.
Yeah.
Truth is that actually any camera, pretty much from, you know, the Nokia N95 would probably do fine. You know, it's a different time. Also, listen, just on the roster of things to talk about, you're going to be talking about the iPad Pro in the coming weeks that you've got, Robin. It's very exciting. I'm also going to be talking about something I got recently. VisionAid Technologies sent me through an Orcam Reed to have a play with for a couple of weeks. I'm quite excited about this. We talked about it on the show before when it was launched, and it's a really interesting device, very simple device, quite costly. We'll get into the benefits of it and how it actually works and what it does in a coming episode, upcoming episode. So, yeah, look forward to that. In the meantime, though, we're going to talk about something else. Robin, you've been interviewing this week because I'm just back, so you've been doing all the work. Who have you been talking to? Who are we going to be hearing from today?
So she'll introduce herself, but this is a professor at City University of London. And it's a really exciting project that will hopefully make seeing AI, for example, even more intelligent at helping find the objects that we as blind people may lose around the house or the garden or even going out for a walk, if we are allowed to do that, every day. So this is a really exciting project that actually all of our listeners can participate in as well.
My name is Simone Stumpf. I'm a senior lecturer at City University of London, and I work in the Centre for Human-Computer Interaction Design. So my research is mainly around artificial intelligence, especially user interactions with artificial intelligence, and I'm also interested in accessibility and inclusive design. The project that we're talking about really marries those two together.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about what you're doing here. I was lucky enough to have a look at an early version of the app and to look at the user instructions that will talk people through what they're going to be required to do. So do you want to give people a tiny bit of background to what the app does and what it's going to mean going forward?
Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about what we're calling the Orbit Dataset Project. So that was funded by Microsoft's AI for Accessibility program. And what we're aiming to do with their help is to harness the power of AI to help people with disabilities. So our project is really focused on blind and low vision people. And what we want to do is help build smart computer vision applications that recognize objects. And the particular thing that we're interested in is what is called personal object recognition. So if you think about intelligent applications like Seeing AI that use AI or artificial intelligence, you can point the camera at an object, take a picture of it, and then it tells you what is in that picture, and it reads it aloud.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Sometimes it gets it spectacularly wrong. But what current applications can't do is tell you whether that item is yours, or at the moment they also don't work with items that are really important to blind and low vision users, like, you know, white canes. The reason for that is that all of the data that powers AI comes from sighted users, right? So items like white canes would never be in the data that is used to build these AI solutions, because, as you probably know, AI works by having data to learn from, right? You need to teach it what an object looks like. So what our project is particularly concerned with is collecting data by involving blind and low vision users, and we're going to collect video data so people can take videos of items and or things that are important to them, that matter to them, through our Orbit camera app. And then we can use that to build better artificial intelligence systems. So in essence, our project is to build a large data set from people that actually will use the app eventually. So that is, in a nutshell, what we're trying to do with it.
Yeah, so the app will be coming out soon. In fact, by the time that this airs, it will already be available for download?
It should be, yes. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so this is iOS only?
Yes, so it's an iPhone app. So what we are looking for is people based in the UK who are blind or have low vision, and who are iPhone users, to contact us and participate in our research study. So actually collect these videos for us. And more information is available from our website, which is Orbit, orbit.city.ac.uk. And if you go to our homepage, you can get to more information about what this study involves and how to participate and how to contact us to take part.
Brilliant. But will that information be available through the app? If people just want to go straight to the App Store, download it, Orbit Camera, then will they be instructed about how to send feedback, or will it just happen? It'll just happen because they are...
For this part of the for the study, we're not making it generally available. So, you know, you have to contact one of our researchers, and we handhold you through that process a little bit more. And that also means that you'll get a little thank you at the end, which are some vouchers emailed to you that you can use to spend. So as a little thank you for providing your data. You know, because one of the things that we learned while we were doing a pilot, and also feedback from people that were testing the app, is that it's really, really quite tricky to shoot these videos that are good enough for machine learning or artificial intelligence, and then also so we have these user instructions that you mentioned earlier. Available that tell people how to make sure that, for example, the thing that they want to record in a video is in frame, that we get different sides of that object that you know the AI can then recognize. You know, also we need to have some some other videos where we can test how good the AI is working. And they can't be the same as the, you know, what we call training videos, that just shows objects from different sides. So there's a lot of stuff and knowledge and technique embedded in these user instructions that helps hopefully users to record these videos easily enough, but also produce videos that are good for artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so if people have a lot of questions bouncing around in their heads listening to this about how a blind person could easily do that, so what you do, you get several objects. It could be your white cane extended or folded. That would probably be two different objects there. Your keys that you might need, and that you have a habit of leaving in different places around the house and need to find. Your phone that looks slightly to other people's phones, although a lot of phones look very similar these days. But nevertheless, the idea is that these are going to be objects that are important for you to find, and that may or may not be, you know, the sort of things that the AI, that like seeing AI, doesn't already recognize. And then you'll train them on clear surfaces, like an uncluttered table, for example, or the floor. And you'll train those in several different angles. And you'll start off by putting your hand on the object and then moving it slightly to the side so you're not obscuring it, but at least you're kind of pointing the phone roughly where your hand was, so you've got an idea of, you've got a chance of getting the thing in frame, you know, pretty well in the frame. And then there are two other testing kind of videos that you alluded to. One is where you kind of move closer and further away from an item, which may or may not be, you know, it might be in quite a cluttered scene. So in the wild, as it were, it's on the sofa along with other things. And, you know, you want to, it's basically real life situations about where you would encounter these things, and the thing wouldn't be still and just pointing at it. It would be getting closer to it. Or the other type is panning, where you might kind of pass over it with the camera as you're moving the phone around looking for it in that particular room or whatever. So it's really, really well described, and it's going to be a massive boon when it finally does update the AI, hopefully in mainstream apps like Seeing AI. But what's your kind of end goal? Is it to build your own AI app, or is it to update the models of the other apps that are already out there?
The data set that we're constructing is going to be made available publicly. So, you know, while we get funding from Microsoft, we are not completely associated with just working with Microsoft. So this data set will be available to other researchers, other organizations, other companies that might want to develop artificial intelligence solutions. We are working quite closely with Seeing AI, and hopefully, you know, there will be a new feature coming up where you can take a video and then, you know, recognize your own personal item. We're also trying to future-proof it. So, you know, new things that are coming along, like wearable systems, could perhaps take that data set to, you know, and build their own kind of new algorithms. So really, our project is really there to provide that sort of step change that allows new artificial intelligence solutions to be built, while also trying to support new things, completely, you know, new things that nobody has imagined before, to be able to use that data set as well. So hopefully we have something very, very practical within the not so very distant future, perhaps even at some point this year. But, you know, there's lots more that can be done with it over the next few years as well.
Fantastic. So if people are interested in getting involved in the initial data collecting step of the process, give us that URL again and how they can make sure that they're in the program.
Okay, so the URL to go to is Orbit, that's orbit.city.ac.uk. If you go there, then there will be some instructions on how to contact one of our researchers and be enrolled in our program.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, and best of luck with the project.
Thank you.
Thanks for that, Robin. Right. News from the internet. Time to get up to date with the news then. And let's talk about iOS betas that are coming out. A new one for iOS 13. What are we, 0.5, is it?
13.5.
Oh, 13.5. Mm-hmm. Right, moved right on. Okay, right, fine. So 13.5. Is it better than 13.4? Much better audience than last week? Is that the idea?
New and improved. Well, the story here, there's a couple of things that are very notable. So it came out in beta to developers last week, and they're talking about as early as this week to come out in the wild for everybody. And, you know, two big things, coronavirus related. One of them is this initiative that Google and Apple have been working on together for contact tracing. So low level in the available all the time in the OS is the Bluetooth signal going out, randomized, completely anonymized, no location data. It's all about who you've been close to that's also, you know, sending out signals, and for how long. So they don't care where you are. They just know that you've been close to somebody else. And all of that data is stored and made available to apps. So they aren't going so far as to build this into the OS so that you will get notified by, you know, OS level notifications. It's an API, an application programming interface, so that the likes of the NHS can use it to have their own apps that people will install. So it's you know, at the app level at the moment, and there is rumours that it will become at the OS level. And I think that's much more important, because to rely on someone having to install the app is the big flaw there. And in the next item, which we'll talk about in a moment, about trials on the Isle of Wight for the NHS app, you know, there's a critical mass that need to get involved. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But critically, or crucially, the NHS and the government are actually saying they don't want to use it. They don't want to take advantage of this API. So that's a big news story, and we'll talk about the Isle of Wight trial in a second. But the other thing on 13.5...
Well, let's talk about it, because, look, I mean, you know, I don't understand this. What is wrong with the Apple and Google version of this that the NHS don't want to use it?
So there was I think it's a TechCrunch article which voices concerns that because it's driven by those two big guys, it's not under the control of the NHS, for example. So you can't make tweaks to it according to UK-centric medical expertise, you know, advice. They want the ability to be able to tweak it, to say, okay, I want to make it more sensitive or less sensitive or behave in this way versus that way. So it's not under their control, basically. And I suppose there's a subtext, which is that if they use it, then they're providing central data to Google and Apple, who might then, you know, use it in the future or not relinquish the, you know, this tracing capability.
Big Brother's watching, is that what you're saying?
I heard it was the opposite to that, in that the Apple and Google way of working is that all the information isn't stored anywhere centrally. It's a decentralized system. It's all based locally on your individual phone. Whereas the NHS and I think the Australian government went this way as well. They want a central server where all this information is stored, and they can analyze it and get stats from that. And they're arguing that that's far better use of the information.
That's absolutely right. So whilst they're saying they don't want Google and Apple to have the chance of storing that data or of tapping into those APIs themselves, because once those APIs are available, by definition, they're available to everyone. So Apple and Google could build an app that would, you know, leverage them and start storing that data. They want to have complete control, and they promise that they won't use it in any other ways other than that, you know, indicated on the tin. So, yeah, it's kind of a...
Well, it goes to whether or not you think that, you know, these companies are out. I mean, there's all the conspiracy theories will start on this, won't they? And it'll happen with the NHS one as well. Any app that is taking your data... I mean, these are the same people, by the way, who probably post on Facebook and Twitter and share their location every 5 seconds, you know, and don't think about any of this stuff. Share photos that are geotagged, all that nonsense, and yet still cry Big Brother whenever something comes along that actually could make a difference to us. Ultimately, for this to work, though, and we talk now about the Isle of Wight, They are trialing this app as of this week, but it needs, what, more than 50% of the population there.
There's 80,000 households on the on the Isle of Wight. So, yeah, more than half of those.
Yeah.
So it's double that in terms of population minimum. Yeah. So, you know, you're hoping that those people will download it. A lot of elderly people on the island don't have smartphones, which is a big problem. A lot of people saw on the news were saying, you know, this is my smartphone. It's a Nokia 3310. What, yeah. Can I download apps on this? And it's like, well, unless you can get the coronavirus app through the snake, then I doubt it, probably. But it's just, I think this is a good idea. I think it's great, but it does depend on everybody using it. And, of course, it all depends on the data as well. Say you've got someone who doesn't want to leave that house. I'm not thinking of you, Sean, honestly. But somebody who doesn't want to leave the house and thinks, well, you know, I could keep people away from me just by telling everybody I've got this virus and no one will ever come near. And then anyone who goes by your house will just get a flashing red light, you know, on their phone, I
unclean,
guess, or however it works.
I see, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Ring a bell.
The Walking Dead equivalent in an app. I don't know. I think it's a good idea, but people have, it's only as good as the data that goes into it, and that's the problem ultimately.
Yeah, so this is the Transport Secretary Grant Shapps announcing that, yeah, it's being trialled on the Isle of Wight this month for fuller rollout across the UK next month onwards. And you're right, it needs to have 80% of smartphone holders, users, to install the app. So that's 56% of the population for it to have the impact that they want in curtailing the virus. Less than that will still have a good impact, but it will not, you know, it will just be proportionately less. So, yeah, it's a significant number. If it was at the OS level, then I think that would be relatively practicable. But if it requires someone to install an app and opt in, you know, that's going to see much, much lower numbers potentially across the UK. But everything
helps. It's an interesting story, though, and I think it's good that we're doing something here. We have to do something to try and to figure out who's either had this or not. I mean, we've heard the news as well this week about the new antibody test, which could be with us in a fortnight, although that's still to be agreed and confirmed and how that would actually come to pass. But this company, Roche, that have come out with the news that they have developed an antibody test, which can tell you with apparently 100% accuracy, that's quite a brave claim, but with 100% accuracy, apparently, it can tell you if you've had the condition or indeed if you're immune to COVID-19. So it's an interesting one. We might be able to use this with the app and everything else and, you know, get our country moving again, which a lot of people are keen to do. I think, I'll be honest, I urge caution on this because, you know, what I'm looking at the moment are all these other countries that have started easing their lockdowns as of this week, you know, in Spain and in Italy. And in other countries as well in Europe that are starting to ease the lockdown. Let's watch what happens there. Is it too soon? This is going to be the endless debate, isn't it?
Tech will save us, don't worry.
Well, maybe it will.
Maybe it's 5G, obviously.
We do the exact opposite of what they do in the States. I think we'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Just do everything the opposite. So I've not injected myself with disinfectant, guys. Just don't want to put that out there. I've just not done it. I decided against doing that for my, you know, I kind of took that decision based on my own advice, and not the President of the United States, who last time I checked does not have a doctorate. But yes, let's just move away from
leave that alone.
Particular mess.
So do we want to hear
the last
thing?
Let's talk about Intel.
Oh,
so on you go.
Sorry, the last thing that happens with 13.5 will be face mask. If you've got Face ID, a device that uses Face ID, you've probably tried to train an alternative appearance. So you can have a second, you know, like if you've got sunglasses or some sort of radical different appearance on a regular basis, you can train your face again as an alternative appearance, they call it. That doesn't work with face masks. It's too different. So what they are going to roll out in 13.5 is if it detects that you're wearing a face mask, it won't even try. It'll just default straight to the PIN or passcode. So that's something else to watch out for in the update coming very soon.
Why not?
Don't like that.
What's wrong with that? You got to enter a PIN. What's wrong with that?
Well, this is why I don't like Face ID, right? Because, you know, and this is why with my lovely iPhone SE, I wouldn't have this
unless you're wearing surgical gloves, in which case Touch ID won't work either, which is exactly the same thing. Thank you. I rest my case.
Okay, fair. Well, in fairness, the touchscreen wouldn't work either. So that's, you know, another problem.
I wonder if you could train it on your nose.
You could just have a face mask, but have your face on your face mask.
Yeah.
That's a magic idea. Face. Yeah.
Is that like those aprons you used to get? Yeah. Half a body on them. Yeah.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know the ones.
No, I was wearing the six-pack one, but I don't know what you were wearing. But okay. Right, I think I see where you're going with that.
Mm-hmm. Pattern, okay. That idea.
Yeah. Get it made now. Right, let's talk about Intel, because they are buying a company called MoveIt. And interestingly, this pricked my attention because I used MoveIt for a long time. I found it a really good app in a lot of ways, but quite a cumbersome app to use. This is a transportation app, but Intel are buying it, Robin.
Yeah, well, actually, the company MoveIt do a lot more than that. So, yeah, the app, and apparently it's very popular, 800 million monthly active users in over 100 countries and nearly 50 different languages. So it's a very significant app. What does it do over and above, you know, Waze or Blind Square even or something like that? Well, it knows a lot about multimodal transport routes, and it powers the Uber apps, apparently, that drivers use. Ooh. So
Really?
That they can take you to the next leg of your journey, whether it's, you know, walking or a bike route or public transport or whatever. So it seems to know, it seems to have extra information over and above, say, the Apple Maps app, for example. I've never used it, so I don't know about the accessibility of it. But it's, you know...
A long time ago I used it. I remember we did a feature on it. I think Sean and I did this on Tech Talk ages ago. We went out and what a complete mess that was. I'm talking about from my end. I went out on the windiest day to record, and I came back to the studio to listen to everything. Couldn't hear a thing I'd said. So let's just say there was a bit of manufacturing going on in the background to make it sound like I was outside, but there was no way I could have stood outside that day. And then I spent, I think what annoyed me about the app was, and this was a while ago, it's probably better now, but at the time, I think I spent half an hour trying to find when the bus I was looking for was due to leave, and I'd missed two of them in the intervening time because I was so busy on the app trying to find the information of when the bus was going to leave. I didn't notice it had come in, and gone.
Buses are always terrible. I've got to say, I do use it, and I use it just on my Apple Watch. It's great on my Apple Watch for...
Watch is great.
For tram times. It's really good telling me which line...
Because you're in Manchester.
Yeah, which line it's coming in, what time. And it's very good for that and very accessible. I don't know about the app itself on the iPhone. I don't really touch it, just on the Apple Watch.
The only one I ever use for transport really is train times. Buses, I tend to just assume that they're going to not turn up on time, so why bother? Just stand there and wait and hope. And that's if I ever use a bus, to be honest. It's very rarely I would use a bus or a train, for that matter. But when I do need a train, and it's mainly national trains, I find that app, Train Times, is brilliant. And again, on the watch, it's a really good app. It's much because there was the National Rail app, which I think
terrible.
Is it the same one? It's not the same, is it?
No, it's not. And it's not good at all. It's called National Rail.
And yeah, then it's terrible.
Train Line, which is actually really good as well for buying tickets and for times and that sort of thing. And don't forget the website, traintimes.co.uk. As well.
Is it that, or is it traintimes.org.uk? I think it was.
Org.uk, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's a brilliant website. Someone's actually built that. I can't remember the guy's name, but he built the website kind of using, I guess, all of the data that National Rail gets, but he's turned it into a very accessible website. So on the computer, it's brilliant. But yeah, if you're on the phone or you're on the app or on the watch and you want something that's accessible to use your train times is brilliant. So a friend of mine told me about that, and it wasn't you. I'm surprised.
Yeah. So just to finish off this Intel story, the reason why Intel...
Sorry, I'm jumping around here like a clown.
No, not at all.
Right, carry on.
Yeah, it's about autonomous vehicles. So Intel are going to be big in autonomous vehicles.
Japan.
And the system, you know, powering them, basically, both the hardware and the software. And so MoveIt, being experts in multimodal traffic, transport routes, plus traffic mapping, so they'll know where the most efficient routes are, which most other transportation apps do. But the combination of the two is what Intel are after, to be able to build in so that they'll have the efficiencies of, you know, the Uber routing smarts plus the multimodal transport. So yeah, we'll see. They can't be too far away now, can they?
Oh, it's exciting times.
Well, I think it's about time that we had something that kind of brought it all together into one. And you might argue MoveIt does that. But I think, is there an app at this point in time? We could argue maybe Google Maps does it. But, you know, an app that you can go to say, I want to go from here to here. And it will walk me to the bus stop. It will tell me what bus is due. it will then, you know, on the bus, tell me the stops, I get off, and then it will tell me, you know, and continue me to the route walking. Is there one that can do that, or is it just, is it a multi? Because I feel at the moment I've got to jump between various apps to do that.
I think you're right. I think Google Maps is the best way to go currently. I don't know of another one.
Do Google Maps know, you know, walkways and stuff?
I don't think so. Well,
what do you mean by walkways?
Yeah, well, yeah. Are you talking just general pavement walking, or
we have any kind of pedestrian route? So in Warwick, we have canals, have bridges over them.
It does barges. Yeah,
it does it in Glasgow. Yeah. Some of the cycle paths around Glasgow have been mapped by someone on a bike. Funnily enough, yeah.
Well, we're not cycling.
Because if you're on one side of the canal and you open up any of these, including Google Maps, and you ask to get to something like one street away on the other side of the canal, it won't take you over the little footbridge. It'll take you around the road routes.
Can I just say I hate buses again? Thank you. I hate buses.
I think you just did. That's good. Well done. No. Look, don't knock the buses, right? They're useful to a lot of people. I'm sure a lot of people will be emailing in saying, excuse me, I use buses
and they're all
the time.
Terrible. Every time I tried the bus again.
Well, it's not the buses that are terrible, it's the timetable terrible.
On the bus, here's my free blind man travel card. You need to scan that. Right, where do I scan it? There. Where are you pointing?
Oh, come on. Just give it to the guy.
They're behind 6 inches of plexiglass. You can't give it to anyone. Maybe that's just...
Well, that's Manchester for you. You don't get that where I live.
Fair enough.
You just get on the bus and you hand the card to the guy.
Yeah, he's on the horse and cart, obviously. Sorry.
If it's like an ATM queue, you just give it to the next person in the queue.
And they run off with it.
Start that again. Do you know he does this, Sean? He actually gives this card to the next guy in the queue, or the guy in front of whoever, and just says, you know, could you just stick, here's my PIN number, you know.
No, wait, Robin.
People are lovely.
No,
yeah, mind
I
you
bet
though,
they are. I'd be lovely if I was taking money out of your bank account. I'd follow you round. No one do that. That is a terrible, terrible idea.
It is, honestly, the amount of emails we got last time over this, it was just...
Unbelievable.
It is insane to me that you do that. You must either you live in a commune or some kind of, what do they call them, gated
Disney
communities.
World.
Disneyland, yeah. I don't know.
Paradise.
It's a beautiful world you live in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know what else to say to that. I mean, just please, that's one of those, if it was on Britain's Got Talent, there'd be a Chiron on the screen at the bottom right saying, do not try this at home. Because you just don't do that, Robin. That's ridiculous.
Bad Robin.
Bad Robin. Don't try it in Glasgow. We're almost out of time. We didn't get to any emails. Andy, I'm sorry, we didn't get to emails. Goodness me. But listen, I just want to say we've got about 5 minutes left. We could maybe cram a couple in. Have you got
There's
short
one
ones
here
there?
That we've been saving just for you, Stephen.
All right, hang on then. We've got to do this. This annoys people, apparently.
Ding, an email. We get your email every day.
It's doorbell time.
Here's your mail today.
Yeah, I got... am I right in saying we get emails saying they don't like this jingle anymore?
There just was one email from a few weeks back saying they didn't like Robin's Harry Potter chat.
That makes perfect sense.
The person who didn't like the jingles, oh, that was ages ago. Yes.
So can I just say, Harry on Potter, the Harry Potter chat, I just want to just bring something up on this, because I did hear the show and I heard the comments.
No, you were on it.
And I've got to
you
say...
You were on there.
I have to say, in my defence, that day was the beginning of my problems. And I wasn't really with it.
You weren't listening.
I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't listening.
Do you take
I wasn't
back,
really
then?
There in the room. And I just felt I had no idea what was going on. And then it was only when I started to feel better and I'd heard the show, I realised I gave you 8 minutes to talk about Harry Potter.
Oh, I see.
And I still have no idea what those 8 minutes were about.
And then the week after that was Hitchhiker's Guide, and then the week after that was Fraggle Rock, so we're not a tech show anymore.
He has been dying to do that story about... I keep going, have I news for you. No. It's not that. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's in my head, Hignify. Because he keeps abbreviating.
And Star Wars, let's not forget the Star Wars.
Star Wars wallpapers.
Yeah, well, listen, you've had your fun. I'm back now. Well, none of that anymore.
We haven't got any time for any emails.
Can't have time for anything. Okay, right, let's get... So anyway, that's the point about Harry Potter. Anyway, yes, you were saying...
Richard Foster in Aberdeen. He says, hello, I'm useless at techie stuff. I hope you'll be able to help me with this query. I have a synaptic phone, which, remarkably, I'm able to use to some extent. The problem comes when you ring a number, then have to use other numbers after being connected, such as press 1 for sales, press 2 for support, etc. There is a workaround, but I can't manage it. The numbers disappear after you've connected. Now, are there any options in the way of an external keyboard that I could use on these calls? And would it be obvious to a totally blind person like me that the keyboard was enabled and connected to the phone? And actually, I'd like that keyboard to have a lovely old-fashioned mechanical buttons. But Richard says any help would be gratefully received. So, Stephen, any idea?
Well, it's funny you say the old clicky keys, because this takes me, Robin, to David Woodbridge and his Quirky Writer. Remember that?
Yeah.
This was a Bluetooth keyboard, which it's a keyboard, right, which is Bluetooth, but it's got the mechanical, as I would call it, Murder, She Wrote style, you know.
And the carriage return and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Everything in it is it's pretty nice. Pretty unusual. Quirky Writer is what it's called. Q-W-E-R-K-Y Writer. And that is a Bluetooth keyboard that's got all that kind of old-fashioned-y style typewriter feel to it. And you can connect that to your phone. I don't know how that works with Synaptic, but I can't imagine it wouldn't work any differently to Bluetooth, any other. Yeah, I mean, it's just Bluetooth, and it's going to operate the same way. You'd probably use your cursor keys, your right and left cursor keys, to arrow through your lists in Synaptic, and then I'm not sure about the entering process. I'll look into that one for you, Richard, actually. I've got my Google Pixel here. I'll pair it up with my Bluetooth keyboard and see how those commands work. But it must certainly be possible. And in terms of the answering phone, I get this, because what probably is happening, Richard, is it's not that the number pad is disappearing. It's that it's probably replacing it with something else. It might be like a speaker button there or a mute button, other things. And there's probably somewhere on the screen a keypad button while you're on the call. But I totally understand when you're in the midst of all of it, you know, you're in the midst of that call, trying to get back and get to the button you're looking for, it is a bit of a pain. So if you can do it more quickly with a Bluetooth keyboard, then well, I will try it out and I'll let you know next week. I'll put that in my notes, Robin. Well, you can put it in the notes because you're in charge of notes.
I find that with voicemail on the iPhone. You know, you're trying to hit 3 to play your messages, but at the same time, the person won't shut up who's saying, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's tricky.
It is. It's not much fun. Although you can do the select the number and then the single tap with the other finger, you know, hold down
ready
on the 3 and then tap with your other finger.
I found a few companies also do the voice one as well now, where you say what department you're after or what number you want after the beep, and it picks up your voice and does it that way. So hopefully more companies go down that route.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. Listen, guys, thank you so much again for being on. Sean, I'm so glad you could come back on for this week. We won't hear you again next week. Which is no shame, really, at all. But we will be back with Robin and Andy. Guys, again, thank you for all your hard work. And thank you, dear listener, for your kind words and your comments. I'll be back again with you on next week's Tech Talk. Goodbye.
Bye.